Welcome to the Friday edition of the Paul Harris Show. Once more into the breach, my friends. I am Paul Harris. Tim Weiland is here in the studio with me. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Hiya, Paul.
And Max is here as well. Hi, Max.
Paul, thank you for lunch.
You're very welcome. And Tim, let me just say, I'm glad you're actually here in the studio with me today for what is going to be my final regularly scheduled radio show in my career. When we had you on from the traffic center, it's been kind of awkward because you've got scanners and beepers and other people shouting traffic stuff to you all the time, and we're trying to have a conversation on the air, and you're trying to have a conversation off the air at the same time, and it was awkward. So I'm glad you're here tonight.
It was awkward, and I always worried that things were bleeding over and it was kind of cluttering the sound, but they said it didn't. So,
yeah.
But yeah, thank you for the invite.
My pleasure. Happy to have strapped on my Sennheiser 414s again. Anybody who has been a professional in radio for a long time will tell you the importance of having the right headphones. This is my tip to anybody who ever is going to go into the radio business. Find headphones that you like and keep them for as long as you can. I will tell you, when I started out doing radio in high school and then in college, that would take me back past 40 years to 45 years ago when I first started doing the profession of speaking into a microphone, although it wasn't a profession yet. It was still just a hobby. In those days, I was doing top 40 radio, screaming top 40, talk up the song, hit the post.
Right.
Every 3 minutes, a song is over, and yeah, you gotta do something with your jingle and talk or whatever it may be. You got to come up with a lot of content, which was good preparation for doing this for a living. But in those days, I had a pair of Koss Pro 4 AA's. Do you remember those headphones, Tim?
Yeah, the big,
they were big,
heavy,
head-crushing headphones.
Yes.
For some reason, had some sort of oil in them that would leak out onto you. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
I don't know why. I also don't know why at the factory they had them set so that they were approximately the same pressure as the tightest springs you could ever find on your shock absorbers on your car.
Yeah.
Those things, if you put them on your head and shook your head violently, they were not coming off under any circumstances.
I guess that's why they replaced them for free when you broke them. Well, because they drop and crush.
After a few years, that's the reason I replaced them with the lightweight Sennheisers that I've worn ever since. And this is still the original band on my headphones and the same speakers. I've only had to replace the foam earpieces and the wires. That's it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So I'm happy to have him on one more time here today. I'm just going to talk about things from my 40-year radio career for this opening segment. And then my brother is going to join us for the next segment of the show. My brother, Seth, who was the deputy secretary and then acting secretary of labor for the United States, has a lot of information to share, particularly because in his capacity as effectively the COO of the Labor Department, he had to oversee what his department did during government shutdowns, which we had again last night for about 5 hours in the middle of the night. Didn't really affect much of anything. But I want to find out from him, what do you have to do to prepare for that? And then he's got some other stuff he wants to talk about, and I'm sure we'll get into some politics as well, a rare subject on my show. And then in the 4 o'clock hour, Max and I will talk about movies. In the 5 o'clock hour, it'll be the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the News. And then at 6 o'clock, we're out of here. I'm looking at the radio station in the rearview mirror. Before I get emails about it, I feel like I have to once again explain the opening music of my show, which I have used for, I think, almost 20 years as the opening music of my radio shows. It is by a guy by the name of Cornell Dupree, who is a not very well-known blues artist. The song is called the Okie Dokie Stomp, O-K-E-Y-D-O-K-E-Y Stomp. I found it about 25 years ago, and as soon as I heard it, I said, that sounds like a show is about to start. And so I used it as the thing that started my show for all those years. And I get emails about it on a regular basis from people. What is that song? There you go. Let me also explain how I came to this radio station, KTRS. In November of 1998, I was living and working in Washington, D.C., and was looking for an opportunity to go someplace else. Part of the reason was that we did not want to raise our daughter, who at that time was 4 years old. We did not want to raise her in the Washington suburb that we lived in. If we stayed there, we would have had to move because the school district wasn't very good. And it was fine for us when we were just a couple, but when we were a threesome, we felt we had to find someplace else. And it was in that month that I got a call from a guy by the name of Steve Moore, who at the time was program director of the Big 550 KTRS. Steve had heard about me from a program director at WRKO, a station in Boston, that I had done some freelance work for, by the name of Kevin Straley. And Steve called me and said, we're looking to fill a couple of slots on KTRS. One is going to be in the morning, and one is going to be in the middle of the day. Are you interested? And I said, well, yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm not really looking forward to going back to doing morning radio. I did it for 15 years. I know what getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning is like. I really don't want to have to go back to that life unless you make it worth my while. And Steve very honestly said, well, we're talking to you, but we're also talking to Dan Dierdorf. And frankly, if Dan wants to come and do the morning show, Dan's going to get the morning show. There's no choice. And I said, well, that's fine. And he said, I'll stay in touch with you and we'll see what happens over the course of the next couple of months. Because Dan, at that time, was still doing football, I think, on CBS. Mm-hmm. We have to wait until the season's over before he can make a decision. I said, okay, fine. So I went on with my life and what I was doing there. And in late January, I get a call from Steve again saying, okay, we've decided we're going to put Dan Dierdorf on the morning show. And we might like to have you come out here and do the midday show. But I've only heard you on audition tapes. I've never heard you doing a live show. Why don't you come out here for a week and fill in on our midday show for a couple of hours a day? And that way we'll all get a sense of it. We'll get a sense of you. You'll get a sense of us. You'll get a sense of St. Louis, which I had never been to before. And I said, fine. Long as you're paying for all of that, and you're going to pay me for the week, because I've had to explain to many people in recent years, I don't do this as a hobby. I did in high school and college, not since. So I came out here, and it was 19 years ago next week, February 1999, that I came out here and met everybody. The first thing that struck me was the beautiful windows in the studio here that allow us to see out into the world, or at least into the inside of this mall here at Westport Plaza, which was much busier in those days. And so a lot more people were going by the window. And the second thing that struck me was that the management of the radio station was not wearing a tie. None of the people in management here were wearing a tie, including Steve, who was the program director, and Tim, who was the general manager, and Mark, who was the sales manager. No ties. It was all polo shirts. And I thought, I think I kind of like this idea, because I had come from a world where at too many of the stations, it had been strict corporate rigidity and didn't work for me. So I came on and I did a week of filling in here. I think I was doing 10 to noon for that first week. And I liked it, and they liked me. And one of the things about that week was nobody told me what to do on the radio. And let me just pause there for just a moment. And I think I can speak for a lot of people in the radio business when I say allowing us to do what we do best is the only way to succeed. When you force a host of a radio show to do stuff that he or she does not really want to do, you can always tell as a listener. There's a disengagement that happens. If you have to follow too many rules, if you have guests who are forced upon you, or co-hosts who are forced upon you, or anybody else who's an element of your broadcast day forced upon you by outside forces, it never works. It never succeeds. And I speak from experience because at the radio stations that I have been most successful over these 40 years, management has always given me all the rope I needed, knowing I wasn't going to hang myself or them. And I can tell you that in the 19 years that I've been associated on and off with this radio station and at KMOX, I have never had a meeting about the content of my show. No one has ever said, come in here, we need to talk about what you did on the air today or what you're going to do on the air tomorrow. Because they recognized, I kind of know what I'm doing.
Right.
That's why you hired me. I've had bad experiences before that at radio stations that knew what I did, hired me to do what I did, and then told me not to do what I do. That was a failure. This was not. And so I did that week on the air. And one of the things that gave me a great boost in that first week was that on the very first day, I got the endorsement of Frank Opinion, a name that I'm still allowed to say on this radio station, but no one else is. Frank heard me on the air, said he liked what I was doing on the air, respected me as a broadcaster. And actually, after the first show, he went to Steve and said, you should hire this guy. Well, at the time, Frank was the biggest name, not only on this radio station, but on any radio station in St. Louis. And having his personal endorsement was huge for me. It laid the groundwork for what I was then able to do, not just that week, but over the course of many years to come. And he and I got along great. We became friends. I filled in for him on his show. He would call in and joke around on my show. It was wonderful. And the fact that we're now on different radio stations, that hasn't changed any of that. I still respect him, and I think he still respects me. So that was wonderful. I did that show here at KTRS for 5+ years. I guess about 5.5 years. But I will tell you, the very first day, when I did that week in February, I went back to our house in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and I told my wife, we're moving. I like these people. I like this town. I like this radio station. I like this opportunity. We're going to move. Then I negotiated the contract. Because in this business, you got to have the contract. And that took a couple of weeks. And once that was done, we left our house there and came here within 10 days. And I started on the air in March of 1999. And as I said, stayed on the air for about 5.5 years. Well, by then, Steve was no longer the program director here. He had gone on to other things, and a guy by the name of Kipper McGee had come in. Kipper was a terrific programmer who I liked and who liked me, and again, let me do what I wanted to do on the radio. That was wonderful. For reasons I won't go into, Kipper only lasted about a year, year and a half at this radio station before he went on to other things. In the meantime, Steve got a job at KMOX, where he eventually became the program director when a guy by the name of Tom Langmeyer left to go run WGN in Chicago. But before Tom left, he hired me. He and Steve hired me to go over there and replace their afternoon guy, a guy by the name of McGraw-Milhaven, who did not know he was going to be replaced on the air. But once it became clear who was going to be replacing him on the air, McGraw very smartly made a phone call over here to the management of this radio station and said, I'm going to be available. He's not going to be there anymore. Why don't we just swap?
Yeah.
And we did. And neither one of us had to sit on a non-compete because the two managements made their paperwork work, and that was fine. And so I went over to KMOX, and I worked there for almost 4 years. Then they took me off the air and refused to pay me for the rest of my contract, and I ended up having to get a lawyer and sue them and win.
That's a good thing.
Yes. While all that was going on, I decided to enter the world of freelance radio. I had a studio in my own home. I was doing freelance work at this radio station. I was also doing shows on KIRO in Seattle and KMBZ in Kansas City and KSTP in Minneapolis and WMAL in Washington and WBT in Charlotte and WHAS in Louisville and WGST in Atlanta and WLS in Chicago, where my old friend Kipper McGee had become the program director and eventually gave me a Saturday morning show. I was on from 5 to 8 Saturday mornings in Chicago from my own home here in St. Louis. Every one of those stations I did from my own home. And I will tell you, the great thing about that was being able to wake up and walk down the hall in my sweatpants and do a radio show without having to leave the house. So those were good years. I also, in that time, did a poker radio show with my friend Dennis Phillips, who you may remember. He came in third at the 2008 World Series of Poker main event, winning $4.5 million. He and I started something called the Final Table Poker Radio Show, which was broadcast for quite a while on KFNS. and was also downloaded to the tune of something like a million downloads a year. This is 10 years ago when podcasting wasn't quite as advanced as it is now. So a million downloads a year in 2008 was really considered a major hit online. And that was wonderful. And we did that for 3.5 years. And then when that was over, I got another phone call from my old friend Kipper McGee, who says, I'm starting up a new syndicated show called America Weekend, and I want you to be the anchor of it. And so I signed on to do that, still while doing all this freelance stuff. And I signed on to do that show on Saturday and Sunday mornings from 8 to 11 Central Time. And we got affiliates lined up from Alaska to Mississippi. And that was an interesting adventure that lasted a year or two. And then when that was over, I turned to my wife and I said, I am burned out. Because even though I was only on the air 2 days a week with that show, in addition to the other freelance stuff, I was essentially working 7 days a week, 50 weeks a year. And it was just too much. And I will tell you, and I wrote about this on my website, harrisonline.com, a couple of days ago. When people hear that you're on the air from 3 to 6 p.m., they say, oh, you only work 3 hours a day? Anybody who thinks that, I challenge you to come into a radio studio with no preparation, walk in at 2:59 p.m., walk out at 6:01, and be able to say that in those 3 hours, you did a good show. I challenge you because I know from personal experience, it's impossible. A good radio show takes a lot of preparation. If you're going to interview authors, I don't read every book from every author that I interview, but I do spend the time to look through that book and get some anecdotes in there that I can lead them to in the interview. One of the worst things that I always hated from a guest was when I would interview an author and I would ask him about something that I knew would lead to a good story from the book. And when I asked him the question about that, they would say, well, I guess you didn't read the book. Yes, you're correct. I did not read the entire book. You know why? Because I'm going to be talking to you for 15 minutes and reading your book would take me 3 days.
Right.
without anything else. I'm pretty sure you did not do all the prep to find out anything about me before this 15-minute long conversation. You know, when Max and I go to a movie, we sit in that movie theater for over 2 hours. We review the movie for 7 minutes. Uh-huh. There's I guess you could call it the risk-reward of our business. What's the input time? What's the output time? Mm-hmm. But I've had the opportunity to interview some fantastic authors over the years, people who get it. People who gave great conversation on the air. I'm talking about Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson and Alan Zweibel and Scott Turow and A.J. Jacobs and Bob Green. I've had guests like Carl Reiner on the air with me about a dozen times. One of my comedy heroes. Every single time I spoke to Carl Reiner has been an absolute pleasure and thrill for me. I got to talk to Neil deGrasse Tyson and Phil Kogan and Adam Savage and Alan Alda and Chris Matthews and other journalists like David Pogue and Rick Newman and Bob Woodward and Tim Russert and Walter Cronkite. Sports writers like Christine Brennan and Tony Kornheiser and Mike Lupica and John Feinstein. Skeptics like my personal hero James Randi and Penn Jillette. And Jamie Ian Swiss and Kevin Sinopathy and Adam Conover from Adam Ruins Everything. I've been able to talk to doctors and scientists like Paul Offit and Phil Plait and Stephen Novella and Art Kaplan and comedians like Bob Newhart and Kathleen Madigan and George Carlin and Robert Klein. In my career, I've had the opportunity to talk with classic rockers like Graham Nash and Clarence Clemons and Keith Emerson and Greg Allman, who told me, to my shock, that he did not want to be a rock and roll star. He originally wanted to be a dentist. How different would his life have been
right.
if he had gone on to be a dentist? I have talked to astronauts and sports agents and documentarians and actors and actresses and historians and biographers, economists, novelists, poker champions, people who escaped from cults, TV critics, investment advisors, a mortician, and Hugh Hefner. I've done interviews with people I don't even remember. But on a regular basis, somebody finds one of those interviews on my website where they're all archived, harrisonline.com. I don't know how they found it. I don't know how they linked to it. Maybe they Googled it and my interview came up and they decided to listen to it. But at least a couple of times a month, I get emails from people I don't know saying, I found this and thank you. It was great with whoever it was. And I don't remember even doing it. I had the chance to produce comedy concerts to raise money for Children's Hospital with comics like Brian Regan and George Lopez and Bobby Collins and the late John Panette, raised hundreds of thousands of dollars there. I've introduced the Who on stage in a stadium full of 55,000 people.
Who hasn't?
I've had a remarkable, remarkable time doing all sorts of things because of this business called radio. When I graduated high school, I thought I was going to be a computer scientist. That's what I went to school for. I went to a math and science college. Two things changed my mind. One, I had stupidly signed up for a three-hour physics lab Monday at 8 a.m. I'd never been to college before and didn't realize the dangers of anything at 8 o'clock in the morning. I didn't get to that lab very often. And the other thing that changed my mind was I started hanging out at the college radio station there. I'd already worked at another college radio station that let high schoolers come in and do that screaming top 40 I was talking about. But this was a place where I was able to really learn about music because it was the classic FM mellow DJ kind of thing where you could play whatever you wanted, rock, jazz, folk. There was a record library bigger than every radio station in St. Louis combined. And you could literally go in the back and put anything on the air that you wanted and say anything you wanted. And that appealed to me so much. And the ability to do what I wanted led me to do this for a living. And now 40 years later, kind of winding it down. But before I go, I got some other stuff to do, including this commercial break. And when we come back, my brother Seth will join me to talk about remarkable things that he's come across in his career in Washington, D.C. politics and more. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.